You're now listening to The Great Greeks Podcast, hosted by Ilias Kosmidis and Paparazzi, also known as John Papas.
I just wanted to ask you firstly, how was your gym workout? Let's just start with
that. My gym workout was horrible. I did sprints on, you know, those treadmills that are like, you know, the ones that don't run with you, like one of the manual kind of ones. And it's just so not fun.
Manual sprint. Oh, what's that?
It's like a treadmill, but like the belt doesn't move with you. It's one of those ones that like, it's all body weight and they're just, they're not very fun. They're not a vibe.
It doesn't sound fun. Yeah. Are you one of these people that does fasted cardio or you have breakfast first?
I do fasted cardio. I can't train after I eat, otherwise I feel sick. So I always like get up first thing, train, and then eat afterwards.
Wonderful.
What about you?
I'll go through my phases. I generally like to work out in the morning and I've tried doing it fasted and then I go through my phases where I eat something first because it gives me energy, especially if you want to lift a bit of weight, I guess.
But yeah.
But you do cut more, I guess, when you're fasted. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think, who knows? Anyway, all I know is that I'm Greek and I like to eat. So I have to train in order to be able to eat what I want to eat.
Well, anyway, thank you everyone for tuning in again to another episode of The Great Greeks Podcast. My name is Ilias Kosmidis. I'm in Australia at the moment and I'm usually in Australia. And I've got a lovely guest with me today. And here's the thing, right? I'm just going to say it. The part of Greece or the island that my guest is from today is the island where Aphrodite's from. So, you know, it's no wonder we get all these really beautiful women like my guest today. Antigone, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Ευχαριστώ πάρα πολύ. Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate you putting some time aside. I know you're very busy. You're doing a lot. You're doing a lot. And we'll go
running
through.
Running around like crazy. I've got to say as well, though, Cyprus is actually not part of Greece. It's an independent country. Just for those that don't know, in a bit of geography.
What I'll throw your way is that it's got the same national anthem and language. I'll say no more.
Listen, the culture is the same. I always say that they're sisters, aren't they? Greece and Cyprus, brother and sister. You know, they always vote for each other in the Eurovision, so that's got to mean something.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we consider you a great Greek and a great Cypriot, no matter how you look at it. So
Thank you.
So nice to have you on today. I just wanted to ask you, first of all, actually, about, you know, your background and your Greek roots or your Cypriot roots, you know. Tell us a little bit, because your surname is Buxton. It doesn't sound like a Greek name to me or surname to me.
No.
Unless it's so like shortened from Buxtonopoulos or something. No,
Buxtonopoulos. No, it's not. It's funny, in Greek school, they would always spell it with an M at the end, you know, in Greek, like Buxton, because you know they don't really have the B in Greek. But, you know, my dad is half English.
Right.
So I'm three quarters Greek Cypriot. My mum's fully Cypriot. She actually did a DNA test and it came back 100% Cyprus.
Right.
So the Greek Cypriot roots are strong. And then my dad is half English. So I have an English granddad called Jack Buxton. And that's where the Buxton comes from.
Right. And your dad's mum was Greek Cypriot as well, right?
Cypriot. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
So I'm third generation. So both my Yayambapu on my mum's side and my Yaya on my dad's side, you know, were immigrants from Cyprus.
Right.
And yeah, so both my parents were actually born in London too. And then I'm the next generation born in London, but we feel very Greek and we feel very Cypriot. You know, we identify as that more than we do necessarily as being English. So, you know, the tradition and the roots, they stay strong.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I just heard you speak Greek a little bit there and it sounded very, your accent was very good.
Oh, thank you.
You've been raised with Greek in the family or you were regularly traveling to Cyprus?
So I was the first child and grandchild on both sides. So everyone just spoke to me in Greek. So I had the blessing of like them really making the effort for me to learn Greek. But then as I got older, my Greek just became a little bit more sketchy. I always say like I'm casually fluent. So, you know, if I'm in a restaurant or in a taxi or chatting with my family, my Greek's pretty good. It was only when I went on Greek TV for the first time that I realized, oh my God, my Greek is chalia and I need to improve it. Because, you know, it's all those kind of like more descriptive words and like things talking in depth about music. And so one of my like goals over the last couple of years has been massively to like improve my Greek, and I've been like having the odd Zoom lesson with my old Greek teacher Kyria Eleftheria to try and bring that up. And it's funny because when I go to Cyprus, they call the London Cypriots Chaluas. So I end up getting called that. And then when I'm in Greece, they just notice the Cypriot accent, and they're, you know, and they just know straight away that I'm from Cyprus, and they kind of, I think they can be a little bit snobby to the Cypriot accent sometimes.
We can't win, can we? Wherever we go, someone's got to say something.
Exactly. My friends in Greece call me a villager, but I'll take it. I am a villager. My family was from the village. I'm proud of that.
I mean, look, I mean, even if people in Athens call people from Thessaloniki certain names as well and vice versa, I think it's just a Greek thing to just poke fun at people from different parts. But yeah,
It's all love in the end.
It's all love in the end. Yeah, correct. Now, I lived in Manchester for about a year, many moons ago. Okay. I did that little thing, the whole gap year thing. But I'm not really familiar with UK celebrities and the rest of it. But I understand that there's another celebrity in your family. Is that right? Your mum?
Yeah, so my mum is she initially was a Greek cook, and she had an amazing series on the Discovery Channel that she wrote and got produced, and had many series, and called My Greek Kitchen and My Cypriot Kitchen, which was kind of all about sharing Greek culture and Greek food, and had loads of my family in there making cameos, and she traveled around the Greek islands. Now she does still cooking stuff here and there. She's an author and she writes books, and she does like the odd bits of TV here and there now, but she's mainly doing kind of more things to do with like human rights and, you know, all the laws that have been implemented and whatever. And she's kind of been fighting that good fight over the last year. So she's a woman of many, many careers and many skills. My mum.
Very inspiring. Is that show that she's been on, those shows, are they shown just in the UK or are they shown in Greece as well?
No, it was shown globally. My Greek Kitchen, My Cypriot Kitchen was shown literally globally. She has a massive fan base in India, funnily enough. And what's really nice and something that like she's really proud of and we're all really proud of is a lot of people, because Cyprus is such a tiny island, a lot of people don't really know it and they just assume it's part of Greece or they've just never heard of it. And there's loads of people that have kind of come up to her all over the world that are like, oh, I'd never even heard of Cyprus until I saw your show. So yeah, it's been a global thing.
What was it like growing up as a Greek Cypriot in London then? Tell us a bit about that. I mean, did you have friends that were Greek Cypriot? Did you go to a school that had Greek Cypriots there? Or was it very much you were one of, you know, a few?
So there's so many Greek Cypriots in North London in particular. So I grew up with a really, really big Greek Cypriot community. And my bapu and yaya actually founded the first ever Greek school, went on to be one of the biggest Greek schools in Europe. So obviously had no bloody choice but to go to Greek school every Saturday morning.
Yeah, right. It's a double-edged sword, I guess,
Right. But, you know, that was at the bane of every Greek kid's life growing up. But then as you get older, you're kind of really grateful for that because that's where we learned so much about the culture, how to read and write and how to do Greek dancing and so much about that. You know, I used to sing in Greek at the Greek school and whatever. So, I grew up very luckily with a really, really big Greek community and spent summer in Cyprus every year, still do as much as I can. It was like, you know, there's Greek shops and there's like, you know, we can get all our halloumia and all our things that we want. So yeah, grew up with a very, very heavy Greek Cypriot presence in my life.
That's awesome. I wanted to ask a little bit about your singing, if we can, because, you know, it's something that defines you and it's,
of course.
And you're very good at it. By the way, you know, I recently came across some of your clips and some of your songs, and one of the ones that kind of touched me a bit more than, I just came across it, and I know the song, Careless Whisper. It's an old George Michael song, obviously. But
I
just the bouzouki player, the way you infuse that in there, and your backup vocalists, and the way you took it on so passionately, it really moved me, I've got to say. And
I had
goosebumps.
Wow, thank you.
I just wanted to ask, you know, how did you get into singing? Where did the spark for that? Were you one of those little kids that got the, you know, the pretend microphone and hold it and sing?
Absolutely.
You were? Right, okay.
I mean, I don't remember not being a singer. I don't remember, you know, an age or a time that I didn't know that music and singing was my path and what I would always do in my life. So it's always been a massive part of who I am. It's always been what I've known I would do. Obviously, the music industry is a tumultuous and, you know, difficult place, but, you know, we're navigating our way through. And, you know, over the last few years, I've really like feel like I found my sound and developed kind of the music that I wanted to make. And you mentioned me using the Bouzouki and the George Michael cover. And, you know, for me, I think my identity, like I said, I grew up with a very heavy presence of my, like, you know, Greek Cypriot culture. And I would always sing in Greek just for like my family or just because I loved it. You know, I was obsessed with Anavissi when I was growing up as well. So I always loved Greek music. But then I always assumed that, you know, I would just do English music and then, you know, at some point maybe do something Greek. But it was one, you know, over time and over working with certain writers and producers and people in my team, I kind of started implementing more and more of the Greek vibes into my English music. And, you know, bringing in Mario, who's an amazing bouzouki player, he plays on nearly every single track that I release now and in my live setup. And I realized actually that is what my USP is and what my kind of like true calling is with making music, is combining the two things that I am, which is like, you know, that pop hip hop kind of production sound that I've grown up around in London, but then the kind of Laiga and the Greek, you know, sentiment that I also grew up with. So yeah, that's how I kind of landed on this sound that feels like I'm really making music that feels like me. So yeah, that's kind of how that all came about. And with the George Michael one, obviously he was a great Cypriot as well. So we thought if we're going to do a cover, that's why not do his? And I love that song and replace the iconic saxophone line with a bouzouki.
Yeah. Let's give a shout out to Mario. Is that, what's his full name?
Mario Costandino.
Okay. Shout out to Mario. We'll tag him in there as well. Great job on the track, and it was great to have him in there for sure. It added that Greek element, as you said, and it seems to me that there is an opportunity to kind of fuse your Greek Cypriot culture with, you know, the more, let's say, Western music, English music. And you've kind of married that very well. And is that kind of where you want to continue to go with your music, generally speaking?
Absolutely, yeah. And I feel like, you know, we're in a really exciting place in the world now where music is so global and international. People are not only interested in music that they understand. Bad Bunny is the biggest artist in the world and, you know, like bigger than Drake. He streams bigger than Drake and he sings in Spanish, and a lot of people that listen to his music don't understand what he's saying. And, you know, Afrobeats is dominating the charts all over the world, all over the streaming, everything. And people, you know, most people don't understand what they're saying, but it's the culture and the vibe. And I think people are excited to learn about other cultures. So for me, I feel like, you know, there's no reason why that Greek sound can't be the next one, because it's not a sound that's just limited to Greece and Cyprus. It's a sound that transcends the whole of the Middle East. You know, it's a sound that Iranians affiliate with, Israelis, Turkish people, Lebanese people. There's that soundscape with the bouzouki and certain horns and certain Arabic scales that we are all used to hearing in Greek music is something that can appeal to so many people in the world. So I feel like, you know, there's been certain songs that have used elements of that in the past, like Pump It by the Black Eyed Peas or some of Timbaland samples. And whenever they've done it, it's landed and people love it. But there's not necessarily been artists that have been like the Bad Bunnies or the Rosalias or the, you know, Shakira's of that Greek sound. So that's what I would really like to be a part of.
Very true. I have this discussion with friends of mine. We always talk about how Latin Spanish music has a voice, even in, you know, the charts in the US and England and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But even if you don't understand what they're saying, you're absolutely right. You know, but Greek music or that Eastern kind of those scales don't really get a voice. Maybe subtly in some songs, but not anything more than that. But I feel like it's
next up. I feel like next up. If you listen to, you know, Sam Smith's song "Unholy," it's a complete Arabic scale. You know, that melody is it could be, if you sung the words in Greek. And, you know, I had a lot of people sending me that as well, saying, "Oh, this reminds me of the vibe of your stuff." So for me, the fact that that song has gone on and been so big is a really positive sign, because I think it shows that people have an appetite for that soundscape and that vibe. And, you know, I'm in the studio with people from all sorts of backgrounds, you know, Nigerian producers or English producers, whatever. And I'm bringing in Mario on the bouzouki, and people are going crazy for it because that sound is so beautiful. And, you know, people that haven't heard it before are, you know, really love it. I've yet to meet somebody that doesn't love the bouzouki from the first time they hear it.
And is it true? And this is just me doing a bit of research. You were signed at 20 years old to Island Records. Is that right?
I think I might have even been 18 or 19, but yeah, I was signed to Island Records.
I better contact that website and tell them they've made a mistake there. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, maybe I was 20. Who knows? The years will blend into one now. But yeah, you know, for me, that was like huge at the time. And I got signed by the president of the label at the time. He was the same guy that signed Amy Winehouse. And I was like, this is it. Like, it's all happening. But, you know, it was one of those situations where the guy who signed me left the label about a year after, and I was still kind of in development phase. And, you know, when the person that signs you leaves, you kind of lose your champion at the label. But I look back at that time very positively, because to be honest with you, as much as, you know, me at 18, 19, 20, whatever it was, thought I was ready for it, I didn't really have my sound then. You know, I had great songs and I always had a voice that was recognizable, but I didn't necessarily have that direction and that artistry yet. So I think it was a blessing that actually I didn't release music in that time, and I had a little bit more time to develop that sound, and I was able to kind of take the advance that I had from that record deal to be able to self-fund and do it independently for a while. And that's kind of how I've got to where I'm at now.
Yeah, and you got to the point where you started your own record label, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Serena
exactly.
Records. Love the name, by the way.
Thank you, yeah. Obviously named after the ancient Greek sirens, who were the singing mermaids. So it seemed appropriate. I'm a Pisces, I feel like I affiliate with mermaids and water and that whole vibe. And there's a beach in Cyprus called Sirena Bay. So that was all kind of part of that decision into naming my label after that.
How hard is it to start your own label, music label?
Honestly, not very hard. It depends what level you do at. You can kind of like, you know, it's kind of like starting any sort of business. It's like you can register your business and you can do it. It's what you then do with it and how you kind of develop it through. So I kind of have it as like my company as such. But yeah, in terms of like the practicality of setting up a label is not that hard, but having a successful label is a whole other conversation. Yeah.
Are you also signing up then other artists?
Not yet, but like at some point I would definitely love to do that. I've still got a way to go with establishing my career and my kind of path, but that is definitely down the line something that I would absolutely love to do, is to be able to kind of develop new talent as well.
I like the patient attitude and approach. I think that says something. Some people are after the result more than the journey, as they say.
Definitely. And that was definitely me for a long, long time. For a long time, that was definitely me. And I think, you know, it took a few knockbacks and kind of this industry just to kind of realize actually things are not always going to go necessarily at the pace that I want them to, but that's okay. And I've just got to be patient about it and, like, you know, just stay calm and believe in the universe and the timing of it.
Yeah, yeah. We live in 2023, so is social media still, do you think it's the best tool in this day and age for an artist to become known and promote their work and that sort of thing? Or do you think the traditional way of trying to be found by a record label is still the way to go?
Absolutely, social media. I mean, literally, you can launch your whole own career by yourself without needing the labels. And the thing is, the labels, on the most part, are only really getting involved in signing artists that are already kind of popping on social media now anyway. And to be honest, that's the only way you should really want to sign a deal. Because if you sign a deal as a developing artist, and you're not a priority, there's a big chance that you won't even get to release any music. And it's like, really, the fact that social media gives a tool now that people can kind of do that is a massive blessing. It means that it's in a way harder because the market is so saturated and there's so many more people doing it. But it also means that your whole career and success isn't just beholden to some guys in a suit in an office thinking that you're worth a shot. You can prove that you are by building your own audience and your own fan base on social media.
Artists back in the day probably didn't have that option, or they didn't have that option. So they'd have to, I guess, hopefully get found out. But with social media, you can promote yourself. You can be tactical, I guess. Yeah, with social media.
For sure. Yeah. Back in the day, you know, you would have had to have money to make physical CDs and get them in the stores and all of that. Whereas like now you don't need any money to necessarily upload a song. I mean, you know, you can spend your money on marketing and things like that. But if you post a video every single day on TikTok, at some point something might go viral, and then there's just so many avenues. I mean, there's pros and cons to it, because I think there definitely is a little bit of the soul and the magic lost through, you know, just like frivolous social media content becoming, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you can't fight against the time. So you can either moan about it or find a way to adapt to it.
Yeah, well said.
TikTok is the bane of every artist's life, you know, making content, doing all of that. Because really, as an artist, I just want to record, write, and perform. That's all I want to do. But, you know, all of that won't go anywhere unless you're promoting yourself and you're doing that. Mm. And you just got to use the tools that we have.
Are you focusing on TikTok a lot or more Instagram? What's your approach?
A bit of both, a bit of both. I need to channel more energy into TikTok. I've got another single coming out in about a month's time. So once we have the date for that, I'm going to be doing up heavy TikTok promotion. Mm. Because, you know, if your song blows up on TikTok, that's it. That's the golden ticket at the moment. So,
right,
yeah, okay. I need to channel more into that. But TikTok's just like this weird algorithm, because I watched a video about it yesterday that was like, even if you have a lot of followers on TikTok, it doesn't really mean anything, because a lot of the discovery is not to people that, if you go on your For You page on TikTok, a lot of the people that you're seeing, you don't follow. So you can have a video that hits 1 million views and then post a video the next day that only gets 1,000.
That's so true.
It's really weird. It's really weird. You know, sometimes I'll post something thinking it's a great video and it will get no views. And then I'll post something silly about like a voice note that my mum sent me and it will get 2 million views. You just think, God. But I think you've just got to like, just keep going and see.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas Instagram, for example, if you've got those followers, they're likely to see your content because they're following you, right? It's in their feed.
Exactly.
With your songwriting, your lyric writing, your music writing, tell us a little bit about the process. Do you make yourself a cup of coffee or a glass of wine or something and sit down and go, right, now I'm going to write something? Or do you just take notes when inspiration comes to you at different times and kind of sit down and put it together?
So for me, mainly my best ways of writing songs and all my best songs have come from something that's happened or a concept that I have that's made me feel some type of way. And then I'll go to the studio with that kind of idea that I want to write about this. Or like, you know, I'll randomly get a melody and I'll just voice note it on my phone or a title idea. But all the best songs come from like something very specific that's kind of happened. I have like a really great team that I work with. Of producers and whatever. So sometimes we'll be like, cool, let's just make something today and we'll go in there and we'll catch a vibe and it'll be a much more of a kind of like, let's see what happens process. But all for me, I'm a storyteller. So the more specific a song is and the more I feel something towards what I'm writing about, the better and the easier. The song, I always say the song writes itself, and those are the best ones, the ones that literally write themselves.
Yeah, it's fascinating to hear how songwriters go about making their tunes. Yeah, some say, like we've had some other people on the show where they talk about how they'll hear a melody 3 a.m. in the morning, they'll try to you know, voice record it on their phone and then they'll get back to it later. And others say they put time aside and they say, right, I've got an hour, I have to, you know, write some lyrics or try to, you know, create something. It's interesting.
I definitely, when inspiration hits is always the best time, but it's not always. Sometimes you do have to just do those moments where you're like, right, I'm going to write something today. Because for all those ones that you push through, you get given a gift of one that comes easy, I think.
Yeah. So excuse my ignorance for the next question, because I'm not really aware of this world, but the whole Love Island thing, I haven't seen it. Okay. I know it's something like Big Brother. I imagine where people go into an environment and then there's like a winner at the end that wins prizes or something. That's all I know. I'm sorry. I just don't
know. Honestly, don't even worry about it. Well, look, Love Island.
But it sounds like a big deal.
I mean, it is. It is. I mean, it's one of those shows that is bizarrely big. You know, everybody watches it, and it's not just in the UK, it's like globally. Even when I was traveling around the Greek islands, I had people from Australia, America, Israel, Saudi Arabia, like all sorts of places who had watched it. So reality TV is never something that I saw myself doing. However, you know, like I've been in this music industry for a long time, and, you know, it is not that straightforward and it's not that easy. And I got a DM from the team at Love Island saying, would you consider coming on Love Island? Would you be interested? And at first I literally sent the screenshot to my family group chat, like, never in a million years would I do this.
Oh, right.
But then I kind of thought about it, and I have some friends who have been on the show before who are now doing music. One example I'll give is an artist called Wes Nelson. And Wes was on Love Island. He wasn't a musician prior. He's very talented and very good. But he was, you know, he went on Love Island and, you know, off the back of Love Island came off with 1 million followers. And now, you know, he's a seriously credible artist. He's got, he's on songs that have 100 million streams. And he's had, you know, just had a track out with French Montana and Clean Bandit. And, you know, and I had to consider that when they'd approached me, because I said, you know what, I'll be the first person going into Love Island who's already a singer. So, you know, I'll go in there as a singer and leave as a singer and just keep doing what I'm doing. And the platform that I can give you is undeniable. Other than like a viral moment that nobody can plan for or wish for without massive luck and timing, I don't think there's anything that could have taken me from 20,000 followers to 700,000 on Instagram and 500,000 on TikTok in a week. I was only there for a week, you know. And
oh my goodness.
And it's crazy. And like, you know, if I and in the UK and outside of people know me now. Yeah, granted, they know me from Love Island, but slowly I'm noticing the shift of people realizing the music side of it. Yeah. And, you know, I'm able to just use that platform. And, you know, if I'm being really honest as well, being an independent artist, you're not making any money. It's a really hard thing to be doing and to be able to like self-fund and whatever. And I was at a kind of point where I was like, I need to figure out how I'm going to make some money. So do I need to get a 9-to-5 and accept that music is, but no, I wasn't willing to give up that dream. Whereas now doing, you know, the Love Island thing and having this platform on social media, it's given me the opportunity to make money through other avenues that I'm then able to plug back into my music and, you know, help to fuel my passion and still be able to live and sustain a life. So yeah, for me, it was an opportunity to get my name out there. And listen, if my husband was in there and I found the love of my life, great. Because people have genuinely found the love of their lives in there. Like people have gone on to get married and have kids and be very happy. So, you know, there was always that. I was single. I thought, why not? But, you know, my husband wasn't in there. There wasn't anyone for me, which I think was probably a good thing in the end, because I think it kept me just staying as Antigone as opposed to Antigone and this person that I'm with. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I just kind of trusted the process of the universe. I thought this opportunity's come, why not take it? And I always watched Love Island and I always loved it and I thought it was hilarious. I thought it'd be fun. It'd be a laugh. And I made some really, really great friends too. So
it's interesting as well that you went in as a singer, as you said, and you came out as a singer, but you're able to leverage that. That's really cool. And now you can bring that stream of traffic to your music. That's awesome.
Exactly. Exactly. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't directly translate. Followers don't translate to streaming, unfortunately. You have to still do the work to build that up. But I always knew that. I always knew I'm not going to go on there and overnight I'm going to be a pop star like that, like as in that at that level that I want to be. But what it's going to do is give me the opportunity to reach a bigger audience. So, you know, I've never shied away from that hard work. So I'm not worried about that. It's just, now it's just transitioning the people that follow me from Love Island fans to music fans.
Yeah, because I imagine, you know, you've been asked to go on interviews like this podcast, for example, and then while you're being interviewed, you can mention you're a singer if people don't know.
Exactly.
Or they can ask you the question. Right, yeah.
Well, exactly. And one of the great things that really happened from Love Island was when I was in there was a little snippet of someone saying to me, oh, are you a dancer? And I said, no, I'm a singer, actually. And this kid, and I was speaking in social media, say kid, he's like 20, never been in a studio in his life. He's an amazing producer called Waypoint. And he did a thing on TikTok and was like, oh, let's see what you sound like on drum and bass. And he took one of my old songs, which was a ballad, and did a drum and bass remix that went viral on TikTok. Off the back of that, a really big drum and bass producer called Goddard heard the track and wanted to get involved as well. He came in and added some production, and we ended up signing that song to Sony, and it's got 3 million streams now, and it's been my biggest song to date in terms of streaming. And it's been played on Radio One, which is the biggest radio station in the UK. And you know, that all came off the back of me being on Love Island, and that was a really big music thing. And so yeah, it was definitely, you know, so many opportunities came through doing that.
So there was no good Greek Cypriot boys on the show for you? Nothing like that?
No, they didn't send me a nice Greek boy, unfortunately. Oh, there's no one for me. But it's all right. It wasn't. I don't actually think falling in love on Love Island was part of my story. I don't think that was my thing.
Right. What's one of the hardest challenges you've had to deal with in your life you think that's kind of made you who you are today?
Listen, it's not like, I think I've been very blessed that I've, touch wood, not had anything, you know, super, super tragic happen in my life in that way. I think a very, very standard, but very, you know, kind of everybody knows the feeling, is probably just a big breakup that I went through. I was with somebody for 9 years, from when I was like 15 till 24. And I think going through that period of that breakup was probably one of the hardest things that I went through. But I think it's something that everyone goes through, right? But and it shapes you as a person. That was probably on a kind of personal level, something that I went through, but it inspired lots of music. And I think for me, really, it was just the kind of the trials and tribulations of the industry, because it's very up and down. And, you know, being signed to a record label and then being dropped by a record label and then signing to another record label and being dropped by a record label, that it takes its emotional toll, and you have to develop a bit of a, you know, tough
thick skin.
Kind of thick skin. Yeah, just to like almost, I hear a lot of successful artists talking about the sense of delusion, and you have to be delusional. You have to believe that it's going to happen, even if all the odds are against you. So I think, yeah, just kind of the ups and downs of the industry and whatever. But, you know, I wouldn't want to claim to have gone through anything super, super like tragic or whatever, which, touch wood, you know, which is good.
Yeah, of course. The world does look glamorous from the outside, you know, I guess for most people. I imagine there are people out there who probably don't know what it's like to be inside that world. But would you say that fame is not for everyone, only for a certain kind of character or a certain kind of people?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, Love Island is actually a great example, because there's been people that have come off the show and unfortunately, you know, gone on to commit suicide, and the pressure of it all has been too much because, you know, a lot of the time people that go on the show are, you know, just regular human beings who've worked like a 9-to-5, never been in any sort of limelight. And like, you know, you come out and suddenly everything that you're doing is under a microscope, and and it's very intense. So I definitely think that like it's certain people are built for it and certain people are not, and that's not a positive or a negative thing to be on either side of that. It's just what you're used to in your life. Like for me, I've always known since I was a kid that I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be a pop star. So I think for my whole life, I've geared up to be in the public eye. So when I, you know, came off of the show and all of a sudden was massively in the public eye, I didn't feel, people would say, oh my God, is it all crazy? They'd see me out and see like certain things happening, people coming over and be like, oh my God, is that weird? Is it intense? And I was like, no, for me, it wasn't, because it's something that I always knew would be a part of achieving my goals. If I want to be an artist to the level that I want to be and be able to play shows to a certain level of crowds and whatever, then that was always going to come with that. So I think I kind of always prepared myself, and I'm grateful to have like a support system and a very like, you know, tight unit of a family that I think, you know, keeps me in a comfortable space mentally, if you know what I mean. So I don't ever
grounded
feel like,
and that sort of thing.
And just, you know, like also don't get big for your boots. Like, you know what I mean? I've got a Greek mum. You think if I got, let it get to my head, I'd get away with that? There's no way. You know what it's like? Tha fal xilo, as we say.
I can imagine you, before you go on stage, does your mum send you off with, take this yemista with you in case you get hungry? Do you get that sort of thing?
My mum's definitely there, like, you know, making sure that I've got all my, like, you know, you're hungry. She's the best. Like, she's, like, you know, always a very, very solid part of the team. And I'm very, very grateful and lucky to have that. So, yeah, very protective, you know, Greek mum on my side. You know, that's a very strong soldier to have.
The fact that she's also a celebrity, I guess, she's like a spotlight for you, right? She can give you some warnings. She can give you some hints because you're getting involved in that world as well, no?
Yes, but like, to be honest with you, my mum was never in the spotlight as much like that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't to that level. You know, people that knew the show and she had a certain audience, but she's not necessarily like being, you know, out and about in London and there's paparazzi running around. It's not, it was a different kind of scene. So to be honest, my mum had not kind of experienced what I experienced when I came off of the show. Obviously she'd had elements of being in the press and also like kind of peers that had been through it more. But I think, you know, they love to like be like, they love to draw on anything with these shows, like, oh, like famous mum. And it's like, yeah, she is. And if we go to Cyprus, people know her. But like at the same time, all these people that were like famous mum, like you didn't know my mum before. Like they didn't know my mum before. So I'm like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's it. I mean,
there was only a certain level of it that she kind of knew, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. The whole paparazzi thing, I mean, UK journalism is notorious. They can cross boundaries sometimes. They're very insistent, aren't they? Let's put it that way, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Did you get a bit of that?
Yeah, but generally I've had a very positive experience with, like, so far, mostly, because there's been some mean articles, but on the most part, I've just found, like, with, like, the paparazzi and with, like, the journalists and stuff, if you're, like, very polite and very nice and kind of just a little bit
play the gracious, game a bit.
Yeah, play the game a bit. Like, listen, at the end of the day, like, if I'm doing music, press is a positive thing, as long as it's, like, you know, so I if I see the same faces, the same press, the same paparazzi and whatever, I always just kind of make that effort to just be friendly and be cool about it. And I think on the most part, they kind of respect that. And it's like a nice, it becomes a nice, almost mutually beneficial thing as opposed to a negative thing. But like, I'm not, you know, at some level of like Justin Bieber where everything you do is intruded on. And I can only imagine what that level gets like. But for me, on the most part, the press has been pretty nice to me. And most of the articles that come out are normally relatively nice, so I'm grateful for that so far. What can be kind of horrible is like TikTok and Twitter. People are mean as hell on TikTok and Twitter. Like when I first came off the show, if I would put my name on like TikTok or Twitter or whatever, like you would see some mean stuff, but like at the end of the day it was okay.
I imagine though, you get people at the butcher or at the fruit store. Hi Andy Gorney, good morning, how are you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's always really nice. Whenever I, you know, when you tune out of the online stuff, in person, people are always really lovely and people are always very kind. And so, yeah, it's a nice thing on the most part.
So what are your goals that you're pursuing now? What's kind of direct line of sight for the next few years, let's say?
Just global music superstardom. Mm-hmm. That's it. That too much to ask for?
Nice and simple, yeah.
Exactly. Look, my dream has always been and will always be to, you know, just be on world tours and performing to as many people as possible and releasing music that I'm passionate about and getting to collaborate with other artists that I love.
Well, you're going to collaborate with one of our previous guests, Evangelia.
Exactly.
So that's exciting.
Oh, I love her. Yeah, she's amazing. She's like my American soul sister. You know, we met through social media, actually, and she is probably one of the only people that I know who's doing the similar vibe in the sense of releasing English music, but with Greek sounds and bouzouki and certain Greek lyrics and elements.
Yeah.
And she obviously had a massive hit in Greece with Fodia, with Eleni Forera. So she's like, you know, at that step further as well. And she's just amazing. And we when we first met, it was like over FaceTime. We had a proper chat and we just got talking. We were talking for like an hour about how, you know, we both had a similar journey in discovering our sound and, you know, our passion for Greek music and bringing that into our English music. So yeah, we just had a really, really big connection over that. And then we both ended up being in Athens around the same time and met in person and just have become really, really good friends and are both, you know, really, really supportive of each other. And we were both in the running for the Eurovision, which unfortunately didn't work out for either of us. But I think we, you know, we had this girl power of like, you know, of supporting each other. And I think there's a lot that we can do together and we have strength in that. So
just looking at, you know, when the news came out, the flyer came out that you both put up that you're going to be collaborating together, it just seemed right. It seemed like this collaboration was meant to happen. That's how I saw it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And yeah, do you know what? We were just like, why not? Like we probably share a similar audience. We, you know, and you know, if we don't necessarily share the similar, if there's people that don't know me that know you or vice versa, they're probably going to like each other's music because we have a very similar vibe. So yeah, why not do that together and champion that and shout about that? And also it's fun. I've realized, you know, in music and this industry, a lot of it can get you down if you allow it to. And I think the key is to just work with people that you are friends with and people that you love and people that make you feel good. And, you know, we have a genuine friendship and I think that will shine through whenever we do something together.
It's a win-win. Just to lighten the mood a little bit as well, Andy Gorney, we'll just play a couple of games if we can to keep it fun.
Yeah, let's do
and,
it.
All that sort of stuff. So I don't know if you've heard a previous episode. If you have, you'll know what's coming up roughly. Okay. So unless Evangelia gave you a hint. But anyway, so you're on a deserted island, right? You're Tom Hanks. You're on a deserted island. You're a castaway. And you've been told, right, you know, you're a castaway. You're on a deserted island. You're on your own. But you get to pick one Greek food you can have with you.
Oh, I don't know the answer straight away.
Okay. And one Greek musician's discography you can have with you.
Okay. Oh, my God. All right. So the food, straight up, Cypriot souvlaki in a bita.
Oh. That's with cabbage, right? Lachano.
No. Mainly is the salad is like, so you've got the Greek bit. Let me talk you through it because I'm going to get passionate about this now.
Yes, please.
Cyprus pita.
Yeah.
Bread. I have chicken and pork mix of souvlaki and some sheftalia as well in there. Mm. And then the salad is like mainly parsley, onions, cucumber, often tomatoes as well, but I'm not crazy on tomatoes. So that, and then lots of tzatziki, lots of hummus, darama, lots of lemon, and the nice spicy Greek chilies. That's me. That is my favorite meal. That's my death row meal. Like, I love that meal.
That sounds epic. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. It's good because you've got protein in there, you've got salad, you've got a few vitamins, minerals. You've covered all the five food groups, I think. You've got bread.
Got everything. Right,
okay, fiber. Yeah, okay.
And in terms of discography, it has to be the queen, Annavisi.
Annavisi, you mentioned her earlier, right? Yeah.
I've been obsessed with her since I was a kid.
She's also Cypriot, so there's that
connection. She is. She's from Larnaca as well. I don't know if you saw my Instagram post, but I met her again the other day. And she is just absolutely sensational.
I did see it. And I did see she gave you a little bit of a bum slap there. That was funny.
She did. And, you know, she actually...
She's a cheeky one from the looks of it, yeah.
She is. And she actually said to me as well, I was going to bring you on stage to sing Careless Whisper because because I saw you sing it so well on social media. She was like, but then I got drunk and I forgot, which she's just so rock and roll. I mean, the woman is 65 years old. She looks bloody phenomenal, and she's singing amazing. To 6 a.m. And I was like, you know what, the fact that you've heard my Careless Whisper cover and even thought about me is enough to make me happy, but let's please do that another time, because that would be crazy. So it has to be Annavisi. I mean, that's hard though, because there's so many other amazing Greek artists and Greek music that I absolutely adore, but yeah, if there was one, it has to be the queen.
Well, she's been around for quite a while as well. So she's got such a variety of music. You're never going to get bored listening to her music. You've got some of the late guy, you've got some of the more modern stuff, you know, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, I met somebody, a guy at Spotify who's very high up in Spotify, who's a fellow Greek. He might be a good person for you to actually have on your podcast. Oh, his name's Nigo Antonio, and he is an Annavisi super fan. And he showed me a playlist that he'd made on Spotify of everything she's ever released, and it was 47 hours long. So that is the amount of music that you have. Okay. So you're not going to run out when it comes to Annavisi. No. So that's a strategic move too.
You know, you're the first one that said a Cypriot gyro in the pita and all that. So that's the first time
we've
heard that.
No, not a gyro. It's very different.
What did you call it? Sorry?
It's a pita bread. It's like, you know, the big pitas that are like fun. I'm going to send you a pita. I'm going to send you, I'll tag you in my story when I have my next Sunday souvlaki.
So if I order it in Cyprus, I have to say, I want, how do I order it?
Just a souvlaki messed in pita.
Oh, she likes the bitter. Okay, cool. Yeah. Easy. The next little game is just a little kind of rapid fire. It's called Kaftika Rekla, or the hot seat, we call it. Mm-hmm. It's just like a few questions, a bit rapid fire question, rapid fire answer if you can, you know.
Sounds good,
And we'll see how we go. Just a bit of fun. Mm-hmm. So here we go. Your first memory.
My first memory was probably being at my yaya's house. I remember being at my aunt's house a lot when I was a kid. That's not very distinctive, but that's probably my earliest memories.
What's your favourite subject at school?
Other than music, of course. Uh-huh. Actually, classics, ancient history. That was my favourite.
Oh, okay. One person that you'd like to have dinner with, dead or alive?
Oh, my God. This is I'm really not good at quick fire questions. I get too deep with it.
That's okay. That's all right. Because you don't want to say something and then regret it later. I understand.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is important. Dead, I always thought it'd be really interesting to have dinner with Jesus. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I've got some questions. And
some questions.
Alive, I'd probably Beyonce or some. Yeah, probably Beyonce.
Okay. What's your biggest strength?
My biggest strength, someone said to me before, is I'm quite good at making people feel comfortable, in the sense of making people feel welcome, you know, like, and bringing people together. I think, I don't know whether that's a Greek thing. It probably is. But I think if I see somebody in a room and I can see that they feel uncomfortable, I'm quite good at making people feel at home and like breaking the barriers down. And I think that's something that I would call a strength.
Yeah, yeah. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of not feeling fulfilled in my life. I'm afraid of, you know, in my personal life or my career life, not ticking those boxes that I know that I need to tick in order to feel like a fulfilled human being. So like, you know, mm-hmm. to fall in love and have kids and have a family and have generational kind of love and then, you know, also to achieve what I want to achieve with music. So I think it's, yeah, feeling like I haven't got that fulfillment is a fear.
What superpower do you wish you had?
It's a messy one, but probably time travel, because there's so many things that I'm like, oh, if I could have done this or just changed that. But it's such a messy thing to do, isn't it? Because
one change changes a whole bunch of things.
Exactly.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. So a more safe one and a cool one is probably to be able to teleport. To teleport. Just be anywhere at any time.
Press the button, you're in Mykonos.
Yeah,
perfect.
Exactly.
Okay. What is your spirit animal?
My spirit animal, it's not really an animal, but a mermaid. It's kind of an animal, okay. Right? A half animal.
Yeah, sure.
Otherwise, a lion.
Advice to 10-year-old Antigone.
Being good isn't enough, like in the sense of like, you know, it's one thing to work on your craft and develop it, but it's going to take more than you think to get you where you want to be. Because I think as a 10-year-old, you know, I always just was like, I worked really hard at singing and playing the guitar and writing music and from when I was young, and I've always done that. But like, and I think I always took it for granted that it would just happen. Maybe if I knew that from younger, I would have, I don't know, who knows, but probably that.
Who knows what you would have done? Yeah, that's exactly. A tough one, isn't it? One country you would like to live in other than, you know, UK, Greece, Cyprus.
Okay, so I can't say Greece or Cyprus.
Because we all want to live there.
Yeah, right? Sorry, yeah, I would have said Athens probably. But I love Barcelona. I could definitely see myself living in Barcelona for a bit because it's got a similar vibe to like London and Athens, right. With the city vibes and the beach vibes with Athens. And yeah, maybe Barcelona. But like in terms of places I've not been, I think I'd quite love to like to live just somewhere exotic for a little while. But yeah, probably Barcelona.
Okay. And last question. What does being Greek Cypriot mean to you?
Being Greek Cypriot to me means family, food, and music.
Nice. I love that. That's so beautiful and pure. Love it. Family, for sure.
Exactly.
That's all I had, Antigone, for you today. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having
me. I know
me.
You're so busy.
No, I appreciate it. Anything with the Greek community, I think, you know, we should all work together and help each other. And so it's a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Thank you so much. You're not planning on coming with Evangelia to Australia to perform.
I'm
She's
not,
coming in a few weeks. You're
I
not.
Know. I wish. But another time.
That would
time,
have been awesome.
That would have. But I definitely will find my way to Australia at some point for sure.
Where can people support you, reach out to you, say hello to you, collaborate with you?
So just I'm on social media, Instagram, Antigone, A-N-T-I-G-O-N-I, Antigone for the Greeks, and Spotify and all the places if you want to hear my music, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. I'm everywhere. I'm all over the internet. So just you can find me there.
Thanks so much, Antigone, for chatting with me. Really appreciate it. Have an awesome day. And thank you to all the listeners for listening in. Tune in again next week for another episode of the Great Greeks Podcast. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.